So allow me to introduce myself. My name is Ryan Jones. I'm the PM Lead for Azure Resource Manager. And so today we're going to be talking about templates and the tooling and capabilities that surround them. When we look at how people are using templates, they're using them a lot. In fact, you guys have submitted as many as 174 templates a second to the service. So that's a lot of templates. So you're keeping my team busy. Keeping the gerbil spinning, I guess, in a manner of speaking. But what we're looking at now is actually how do we help you use templates after the first deployment? How do you use them to update your applications? How do you do these things safely? How do you distribute these templates and artifacts throughout your organization? And so we'll be digging into that deeply today. That's the prologue. So first thing is we've seen that sometimes there are creative things you can do in the templating language, but maybe we've made it a little bit more difficult than it needed to be. And so what we've done is we've introduced a broad set of new functions to the templating language. A lot of these are set functions. These are very, very helpful when you're performing networking operations, so on and so forth, conversion functions, as well as logical operators, which might not make a little bit of, or a whole lot of sense right now, but they'll make sense by the end of the session, okay? And so all of these items in the bottom, you can see we have a link to complete documentation. I'm not going to show you, hey, look, we can convert a string into an array. I figure we all have better uses of our time today. So we're going to move on to some more interesting demos. So one of the questions that I believe this gentleman asked earlier is, hey, I have the ability to copy resources, but lots of times I need to be able to copy within properties. How many of you have had the need to copy inside of properties? Okay, the rest of you just haven't found it yet. You do. Perfect example of this is I have a virtual machine, and I want to be able to specify a dynamic number of data disks in that virtual machine. Okay? So you guys are familiar with properties, resource properties. Here, hold on. Let me get my. It's just not bright enough. Okay, so we'll just look at the yellow together. So inside of properties, we now support the copy construct. You'll see that it is an array because anytime you're copying things, it is outputting an array. You provide a name of the copy set. You provide a count, which describes the number of copies. And you provide an input, which is the JToken that you want us to copy. Now let's look at an example. So we'll take a count of three. We'll give the copy set a name of my copy set. And then you'll provide us with an input. We have two types of inputs here. The first line, key A, is a static input that'll just be cloned over and over again as is. Key B is actually dynamically using the copy index, which explicitly points back to the name of the copy set. And so when you look at what we compile or expand this template into, you'll see that we have a copy set with key A the same way each time, key B using the copy index, a zero-based index for the three different copies, and we have the count number of elements in that set. So let's take a quick look at a more practical example, namely how to do this with data disks. So what I'll do is I'll pull up Visual Studio Code. This is a very simple template for a single VM. However, what is different is we have an input called data disk count. It is of type int and allows values of one and two. If I scroll down in my template, this is normally where you'd have the data disks definition. Okay? And so because I want an object named data disk, I give the copy set the name of data disks. I specify the count, which is the number of data disks I want, and then I provide the JToken that I want copied, which is, you know, in this case, disk size, the LUN, which uses the copy index, and then provide a create option. And so through the magic of television, we really believe in cooking show demos here. I figured you guys didn't want to pay to watch me run templates. We'll see here that I have my deployment here where I provided an input of two data disks. And if we go and browse my resource group, you'll see, hey, magic, we have two data disks. Okay? So you can now copy properties within resources. So we think this will be really helpful in cases like VMs with data disk. This also crops up in a number of the networking resources as well. So the next thing, and this one is really, really key when we think about how to use a deployment for templates to deploy your app after the initial deployment. So when you specify copies on resources today, did I just lose audio? Okay. Can we get a backup? And I'll just speak loudly. Can you hear me in the back? Okay, I can't do this the whole time, though. So when you use regular resource copies, I'm back. Okay. When you use regular resource copies, and let's say you tell us, hey, create 5 widgets. How do we create those 4 widgets? We create them in parallel. This is for performance, because typically you want your app running up and quickly. However, if that's a prod app, it's not such a hot idea to deploy all of those websites or VMs in parallel because you just updated and took your app down all at once. And so we've added support for serial copies. So what we've added here is within the resource copy construct, there's now a new attribute, mode, which is serial or parallel. If you don't specify it, we default to parallel, which is the behavior today. And then you can define a batch size, which defines how many copies will be in each batch. And so if we look at an example of how this runs, on the left-hand side, you'll see that I have resources named using the copy index. I then define a copy set. I provide the number of counts or the number of copies I want. I specify the mode serial, and then I define the batch size. And so what this will do is this will create 4 copies. However, it will automatically set the dependencies so that the second set of resources or the second batch will be dependent upon the first set, so on and so forth, okay? And so this is a way where you can do things kind of like an upgrade domain walk within your templates. So pretty simple to work with. And so let me show you a quick example of what this looks like in practice. So I have a template here, actually quite similar. That's not true, I lied. This template uses nested deployments. Sorry for the gentleman that asked questions about debugging nested deployments earlier. But in this deployment, I have more or less like a vertical representation of my app, and I want to update it serially. And so in this case, I'm saying I want 4 copies. I want you to perform in batch sizes of 2. And behind the scenes, the template, the nested deployment that I'm using is actually just a very, very simple single VM template, deploys a Ubuntu VM with a public IP, so on and so forth. And so if we go to the portal, I will select the resource group for serial copies. I'll go view my deployments. And so what you'll see is I have my outer deployment, the one named serial copies right there, but then I have the 4 nested deployments underneath. And so you'll note here that the start time for these two are very, very close together, and then these two are closer together after the fact, okay? And so the reason why is because we automatically created the dependencies between 2 and 3 on 1 and 0, okay? So great way to be able to use the template to be able to perform, you know, walking upgrades after the fact, okay? So that's serial copies. So the next thing that we heard about is many cases where in management scenarios you want to deploy applications and like resource groups owned by the different business units, but your let's say you have like workspaces for management that reside in a different resource group, or let's assume that maybe you have VNets that are centrally managed, but you might want people to be able to create subnets and these sorts of things. Well, historically, our deployment objects have been restricted to within a single resource group. And so I'm happy to announce today that we now support cross-resource group deployments. And so the change here is actually fairly small. We do require use of nested deployments here to implement proper isolation with the resource lifecycle boundary. The first thing is with these deployments, you'll need to use one of our new API versions. I think that's yesterday, so hot off the press. You'll specify optionally a resource group name, which is the resource group that you want this deployment created in. An important item, this requires the latest version of PowerShell, and we'll have AZCLI support coming soon. And so to look at what this looks like in practice, as you guys know, ARM, you know, is this the templates provide this declarative language for expressing what you want your application topology to look like. but we convert these into a series of imperative calls that go to either ourselves or other resource providers. And so by specifying the red resource group attribute, my second resource group, you're able to manipulate the put that we issue actually against ourselves for creating this deployment. There's actually a bug here. It should be my second RG WAC, my Microsoft.resources WAC deployments. But you can see how more or less it's a very fixed transform. The interesting thing is this transform that I'm showing you here is actually the exact same way that we transform all other requests from our templating language into the requests to the resource providers. And so you can actually, if you're ever, the other question kind of about how do I know what API version to use for which resources, so on and so forth, you can actually look at the MSDN documentation or use Resource Explorer for a resource that exists and generally convert that fairly easy back into what that thing looks like in the template, because it's just a fixed transformation. We aren't clever enough to do anything else, I guess. So let me go show you what this looks like. I'm going to go to a resource group. Now, this is the resource group into which I've created the primary or the master deployment. And so if I select my deployments here, we'll see that there are two resources or operations listed. The first one is a storage account that was defined in that template. The second one is the nested template. And so if I select that, I'm going to hover over my resource ID here. And so you'll notice that the resource group into which I deployed this was not the local resource group, but in fact is the secondary resource group. And so if I expand the information here, we'll see that I have the cross-resource group storage account. Okay? So resource in the local storage account, resource in the remote storage account. And to show you the template for what this looks like, here is the local storage account resource, so just like any other resource entity. And then for the cross-resource group deployment, that's this guy right here, which is the nested deployment into the cross-resource group resource group. Okay? So that's cross-resource group deployment. I am so happy to be able to show you this today, because every time I presented on ARM, whether it's Ignite, Tech Ready, Tech Summit, Build in past years, the question I've always gotten is, when are you guys gonna support conditions? I now hope, well, I guess I'll have to answer it for another 3 months while everybody learns that we support it, but I'll now never have to answer that question again. So I'm proud to announce that ARM now supports conditions. Thank you. Now, I would ask, since you're excited, please tell all your friends so they won't ask me. And so the way that you leverage these is actually fairly straightforward. You're able to define a condition attribute on a resource object. That's about it, okay? It's fairly simplistic in its expression. And so I'd like to walk through a couple of examples with you, because when you think about what the right behaviors are when you have resources which depend on one another, behaviors can be a little bit tricky, and so I want to explain to you what those things are. So here is a simple pseudocode template. We have three resources, A, B, and C. C depends on B, B depends on A, but B has a condition on it, and you'll see that's a bool. And so if we supply condition is true, the way this executes is first we will deploy the name, or I'm sorry, not the name, resource A. We will then deploy resource B, and then we will deploy resource C. So in other words, if it's true, it behaves exactly like it does today. No big deal. Now, what if the condition is false? We will provision resource A. We will then no-op on resource B, and then we will deploy resource C. Now, this is very, very important because in a lot of cases, like imagine newer existing with a storage account. You actually need this pattern, because otherwise, if you were to do a condition on the storage account, then we would never actually get to provisioning the virtual machine that depended on the storage account. Now, you might be asking, well, Ryan, I actually want that full leg of execution to be blocked by this condition. Okay, that's fine. What you'll want to do is you'll add the condition to the other entities in that leg of the graph. And so we will deploy A, we will then no-op B, and we will no-op C, and the deployment will succeed, okay? So, no questions, we don't have enough time afterwards. Sorry, we have a ton of content to cover today. We can do questions afterwards. So let's show you what this looks like. So pattern number one that we see people doing with conditions is new or existing. I want to create a resource or I want to leverage an existing resource. And so this is a standard template, once again, simple VM creation. It doesn't use managed disks because it's a helpful demo. And so we have, you know, one of the first things that you have to have to create a virtual machine is, of course, a storage account. And so we have a condition that's gathered from the user right here, new or existing. They provide us with the value, new or existing. I guess it's very creatively named. And then down here, we say, hey, if the parameter is new, then this evaluates to true, and we will provision this resource. Okay, otherwise, we skip it. And then what we do down here in the VM, where it needs to reference the storage account, you can continue to use the reference function. However, there's one very, very important thing to keep in mind. There are two ways that you can use the reference function. One way is what I call the shorthand version, where you just provide us a resource ID. The other way that you do this is what I call the long form version, where you provide us the resource ID as well as the API version. You have to specify the API version if you want to use the reference function against a resource which is not declared in the template, okay? Now, the reason why is because when you provide us with the short form version, we're able to use information from the earlier resource provisioning job in latter execution. However, if the condition was false, there's no output to come back to us, okay? By providing us with the API version in addition to the resource ID, you provide us with all the information necessary for us to look up that resource, okay? Make sense? Nobody's mind blown? Okay, good, awesome. So scenario number two with conditionals is I want to create a virtual machine, and let's assume something just completely crazy, which is the virtual machine that you're provisioning isn't running Windows. Long shot there, I know. And so when we see people, you know, working with Linux machines, not as many people naturally say, oh, I would like to use a username and password. They say, I would like to use a username and an SSH key, right? And so doing this in the past in the template language was very, very painful. You essentially had to have two completely different set of templates using nested deployments with objects passed between them so that you could kind of bypass our type validation. You don't have to do that anymore. So I take an input from the user, which is password or SSH key. I get the admin username, which is used in both cases. I then get the admin password or the SSH key. I provide defaults for them so that the template will execute or have an input if one is not present. Don't worry, we won't actually provision a VM for you with an empty password. And so if I scroll down, what you'll see is that I have one definition of the virtual machine, which will be provision if the user provided the password value. And so you'll see here, we use the standard username password. And then I have another definition for the VM, which is if they specified SSH key, then rather than doing the username password, we do the admin username and SSH configuration. Okay? So, conditional support in templates. How many of you saw Corey's presentation yesterday evening? Okay, not that many of you. So we will do a bit of review. So we're also introducing at Build what we call Azure Managed Applications. And so really, Azure Managed Applications are building on and around the success that we've seen with ARM templates. Because we've been seeing a couple of questions that people are asking as they build more and more advanced apps using templates. The first thing they ask is, how do I more easily share my templates with others, whether they are inside or outside of my organization? Of course, yes, I can throw up on GitHub or whatever, but you know, maybe I want a little bit more than that. The other thing is, how do I improve ease of use? So as you guys have seen, you share that template up on GitHub. You then click the Deploy to Azure button or whatever, and you're presented with a menu of a million different text boxes that you get to enter. And if you're like me, if you get them all right, you're like, okay, I got to clock out because I'm going to go buy a lottery ticket right now. So how do I make it easier for people to deploy these things? And then after the fact, a lot of times we see that people are deploying apps where they might not necessarily understand what's going on behind the scenes. And so we see many cases where people deploy an application. They're like, oh, cool, I have my Cassandra cluster running. It's a little expensive. I'm going to delete a couple of these VMs. And of course, then they experience some form of catastrophic data loss. And then the final thing that we see is, hey, how do I provide management for my users after the fact? Because when we think about overall spend for application lifecycle, yes, there is money spent on the hardware to run the app, the software the app is running, but a lot of money is made in operations, support, updates, so on and so forth after the fact. And so we are introducing managed applications for you, for builders. These items can be, number one, shared or sold. So when you build a managed application, using role-based access control, you can share it with other people in your organization. When you do this, it can be done in a way, depending on how your Azure subscriptions are set up, so that people can use your managed applications alongside the full power of Azure, or they can exclusively use managed applications. So this can also be used to, shall we say, curtail the Wild West usage of Azure in deploying unapproved or insecure applications. Item number two is they are simple to deploy. We have a robust Create UI definition language, which allows you to define which controls should be used in the Azure portal so that you're able to collect the right information from the users. And in many cases, those controls actually know how to validate the user input to ensure that proper input was provided to you by the user. Item number three is that they are contained, and that when you provision an appliance, it's not like what you have with templates today. I'm sorry, I said appliance, I meant application. Codename slipped through there. But they are contained in that you actually create a resource called a managed application. The resources optionally behind that thing are in a resource group which can be locked to the user so that they can't turn around and break things. And then finally, there's a connection that's established here in that in your appliance definition, you can describe what level of permissions you need to manage and operate that application, as well as look at things like deployment success telemetry, application error rates, so on and so forth. And so let's look at the anatomy of a managed application. We start with a template, exactly like any other template that you've ever built. The only important thing is, in this case, at least for right now, while we're in preview, it has to be named appliance-main-template.json. This describes all of the different resources which will be deployed to support your managed application. You then provide us with an appliance create UI definition, which describes what you want the user experience to look like for provisioning this managed application in the portal. Then you provide us with what we call main-template.json. This is the template which provisions the appliance resource itself. And you package these items into a zip file. Now, there's nothing clever to say about that. In addition to that, you'll add some configuration metadata, which includes who needs to access the resources which support the application. So who they are, principal ID, this is a user group or service principal, and then role definition ID, which is the role definition which describes the permissions that the user will have to the application. And then finally, the app control level. You're able to define, hey, in my managed application, can people be able to read only? Can they be able to read, write, but not delete? Or are they able to do anything they want to the resources in the managed application? And so all that stuff put together is what makes up a managed application definition. So let's take a look at what one of these items looks like. So we'll start with our appliance main template. Remember, this is the template that describes what resources look like, what resources need to exist for this application to function. And candidly, there's really nothing special going on here. It's same stuff you saw in maybe some of my other demos today. I might have reused the same template a few times. But username, password, DNS label prefix, an OS version with a default. And then at that point, it's variables and simple set of resources, a storage account, a public IP address, a virtual network with nested subnet, network interface, and then VM. So nothing special going on here. This is, I think, an unmodified version of the simple Linux VM template that lives out on GitHub. Okay, so no magic. Now here is the template which the portal will use to actually deploy my managed application. And so here we declare parameters. You'll note these are practically identical to those in our last template where we say, hey, I need an admin username, password, DNS label prefix, OS version. But what's interesting is the resources that are being deployed here is not a storage account, Nix, VNet, so on and so forth. It is an application resource that is being provisioned from the service catalog. And so in here, I provide the ID of the appliance definition. It's kind of interesting because this is actually the ID of the resource that I'm getting ready to upload. I provide a managed resource group ID, which is the ID of the resource group which the appliance service will create to contain all of the supporting resources. And then we have the parameters, which are the actual pieces of information that we need to get from the user. And so here we have the admin username, password, DNS label, prefix. We don't actually get the OS version because we have a default, and we want to gather as little information from the user as possible. In fact, this would be one of my recommendations to you if you're looking to improve success rates of template deployments or managed appliance deployments. The less information you gather from the user, the more likely they are to enter it correctly and be in a position where this thing will create successfully. Okay? And then finally, we have the appliance create UI definition. This is a JSON document that once again describes what the portal experience looks like. And so there are, let's see, 1, 2, 3 basic sections inside of parameters. The first one is basics. This is the first item that shows up. This will have a subscription picker, a resource group picker, as well as any controls which you declare here. And so in this case, we have, you know, a way where we gather that admin username, and we provide additional metadata around, hey, what is the name of this thing to reference elsewhere? What control do we want to use? How do we want it labeled? What is the tooltip that we would like to provide to the user? And then some additional metadata about that control, which says, hey, you know, we're getting username information for a Linux box. Then we have a password box, admin password. It's a password box. We give it a label, a tooltip. We then add a constraint and a regular expression, which is evaluated client side to make sure that they gave us a valid password, and then a validation message that we show them when they don't meet those requirements. And then we also have options here which define whether or not they have to enter it twice. You can hide that if you want. So there are about a dozen of these different controls that you can use and include in your Create UI definition. The next section is what we call steps. So after you've entered the basics, you can then declare a number of steps where you gather additional information about how to deploy this particular managed application. And so in this case, as you remember earlier, we needed to get information from the user about what we wanted to use as the DNS name for this particular application. And so what you'll see is we get information about the IP config, a bunch of similar settings related to this. And then this is kind of where the rubber meets the road, which is at the end, we output admin username, admin password, and DNS label prefix, referencing the values from the objects up above. And the names of these output actually match the inputs or the parameters on our template. Okay? Make sense? So, three documents that we've walked through here. Number one is the regular template that you have, which describes the application. Item number two is the template which tells us how to deploy that application. And item number three is the Create UI definition, which describes the portal experience that will be used to deploy this. So let's now talk a little bit about the service catalog. I'm going to skip this next slide because I don't like it. And so let's talk about how we initialize this service catalog. So you have this artifact that's ready to go, but now what do you do with it? How do you upload it so that you can use it yourself or share it with others? So the first step is you'll upload that application definition. From there, you can then begin to create applications. Once you're pleased with the quality of your application, you can then share it with others through RBAC. And then at that point in time, they can create instances of the managed application, and optionally, you can then choose to manage it on their behalf. And so let's do a quick demo. I am going to pull up this document here. And so appliance definition management is currently handled through the AZ CLI. We will have PowerShell support coming soon. And so the first thing that we'll do is we'll create a resource group into which we'll create the appliance definition. Nothing really special or new there. And then we will create the managed app. You can run this through the cloud console if you like. So the first section is an authorization section. And what this does is this says, hey, which user is going to be able to perform which actions. And this is actually an array, so you can specify multiple users, groups, or service principals which have differing levels of access. This can be very helpful when you have multiple tiers of support, or in many cases we see people will build automation against these against the different managed applications, and so they might have a privileged set of service principals which can interact with the app. You then provide a description, which is shown in the portal, a display name, which is the name that will be shown in the portal. You tell us where to create the application definition. Important note, in fact, this is what caused Corey a little bit of challenge in his demo yesterday. We are currently available in two regions. Number one is West Central US. Item number two is East US 2 EUAP. That's one of our Canary regions. Corey selected Central US in his demo yesterday. So we weren't able to copy the bits across the continent fast enough for him. You'll then provide the actual resource name for the managed application, the package file, which will need to be hosted on some form of HTTP accessible URI. In this case, we're using Azure Storage. You provide the resource group name into which you're wanting to deploy this, and then finally, you define whether or not the application will be locked for your users, okay? And so I've already run this, and so we can now take a look at what that looks like in the portal. In fact, I've run it several times. And so I can go here and select Service Catalog Managed Application. I'll pick Create. And so now what I'm presented with, if I don't pull my laptop off of the stage, is the list of the managed applications that I have built myself or that have been shared with me by others in my organization. And so, because I love TPS reports, we will deploy Ryan's amazing TPS report managed app. And so what you'll note here is that the questions that I'm being asked are the same as the questions that we built in that appliance create UI definition a few steps earlier. And so I'll provide an admin username. Now note, if I leave it, no, it won't. If I, like, for example, type in passwords that aren't good enough, it will do things like tell me they don't match. If I enter ones that match but don't meet password complexity policy, it'll say, hey, it must be blah, 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 that message that I entered in earlier. So I'll give it a strong password. I'll pick a subscription and a resource group picker. This is always present in the basics blade. I'll call this build demo. And very, very importantly, I will create this in East US 2 EUAP where that appliance definition has been created. So that's actually one other important thing to note, is during preview, your appliances will need to be created in the same location as their appliance definition resides. I'll then provide a public IP domain name. So let's do better than that. Build demo app. I'll click here. And so what's cool there is you saw it spun for a second. What it actually did is our networking resource provider exposed an API to check name availability. This UX control actually knows how to call that and see whether or not somebody else has used that name. Now, hopefully one of you pranksters out there hasn't gone and taken that name since it validated it. And so at this point in time, it's ready to go. It validated that that template should be deployable into my subscription. Now what's interesting here is if I click download, this is that main template.json that we looked at earlier. And so if I click OK, it will proceed to deploy that application. Now that's going to take a little while. So through the magic of television, I have deployed a set of managed applications already. And so we have, you know, a bunch of them. Some are CentOS, FreeBSD, Red Hat, the TPS report app, an Ubuntu-based app, and a WinServer-based app. I can go and select one of these items. And so we provide the attributes of that particular managed application, as well as things that were output from template execution, as well as provide a link to the resource group which contains those resources. And so here are all the VMs, public IPs, NICs, VNets, and storage accounts which support the appliance definition. And so if I were a user and I were to try to delete one of these things, that deletion would fail. Now, I just so happen to be the appliance definition creator as well as that admin, so I'm not going to do that because I can't actually delete and break things, okay? And so that concludes the managed application demos. Let's talk a little bit about what happens when we do that. So the user says, hey, I want to create or update this application definition. That comes to ARM, which then sends it to the application resource provider. And in turn, what the application resource provider does is it exposes the main template, the appliance create UI definition, and the appliance main template for others to consume. And so when a user comes in to provision the managed app, what happens is first, they enumerate the appliance definitions. This list is post-filtered via RBAC, which provides the capabilities around sharing the service catalog throughout the organization. Once they have this metadata, they're then able to retrieve, as necessary, the create UI definition to render that bespoke portal experience. From there, they can then put appliance via template, which ARM processes, does its template thing, submits to the appliance RP. The appliance RP then creates the managed by resource group. It then locks that resource group, which goes to the locks resource provider. It then writes the role assignment for the admin or operator, or whatever you'd like to call it, for the managed application. And then finally, it submits the deployment. And so maybe I should have called this where appliances come from. But this is how an appliance is made. So there's one other thing I would like to show you, which is everything we've done up until this point is really around how am I able to build managed applications and share them within my organization. However, in many cases, you may be building applications which you would like to distribute outside of your organization or maybe even sell. And so I'd like to show you one example of this. This is in limited preview. If you are interested, please contact me via email. My address is there at the bottom. And so let me show you what this would look like. So here what we have is an example of a managed Ethereum blockchain application. There's actually an unmanaged variant of this in the marketplace as well. But this is actually a group in Microsoft that, as an example, has said, hey, this is what our blockchain managed application could look like. So it has very beautifully written copy there that I'm sure you can all read in the back with that eight-point size font, as well as lovely images, so on and so forth. I can click Create, at which point I'm provided with a much more advanced, because this is a more advanced application, that then follows the exact same provisioning processes that we walked through in the past. Now, what's interesting or distinct or unique here is that in many cases, the person that is operating the appliance in this scenario is different in a different AAD tenant, in fact, than the person who is consuming or deploying that appliance. And so we leverage some extensions to role-based access control to provide some basic forms or shapes of cross-tenant authorization such that the ISV can log in and see all of the managed by resource groups that they need to manage to keep all of the different managed applications up and running. So there's no longer a need to go and procure, 800,000 tokens to be able to deploy and manage all of the different applications that have been deployed from a given ISV. So exciting things there. And so once again, if you're interested, drop me a line. My email address is there at the bottom of the screen. So the final thing that I'll be talking about before I hand over to Ash, it'll be about 4 minutes, is how to integrate monitoring and diagnostics into your templates. This is a common, I don't want to say mistake or error, but let's call it opportunity for growth, where we see lots and lots of people provisioning infrastructure and even pushing code into their infrastructure via templates, but they tend to not add monitoring. Adding monitoring still seems to be a thing that's done after the fact via point and click. And so to give you a brief summary or overview of Azure Monitor, there are really kind of two different sources of information, the first one being resource metrics, the second being the activity logs. Now, against these two different data sources, you can create rules, and then upon those rules, we will perform or take different actions. In the case of resource metrics, it can send you an email or it can invoke a webhook. In the case of activity logs, this is actually tied to what is called an action group, and that action group can contain SMS, email, or webhooks. And so let's take a look at what a basic monitored application template will look like. So I've got basic template here, once again, Linux VM. But what we're going to do is we're going to skip down to the bottom after all the regular infrastructure stuff that everybody here already knows how to do. And we're going to look at the different resources that we've created to add telemetry, monitoring, and diagnostics to this application. So the first thing that I've done is I've created an alert rule. And then inside of my properties, what you'll see here is I have a condition as well as an action. And so on the condition, what I do is say, hey, this is a threshold rule. My data source is a metric data source. The resource that I want to monitor is this VM's resource ID, and the metric name that I'm interested in is CPU percentage. I'm then able to declare a threshold as well as the time window size for that particular monitor. And so by doing this, what I've said is, hey, this alert should trigger anytime CPU utilization is above, at or above 90% for 5 minutes or longer. And so when that happens, in this case, what I've done is I've included an email action, which will send an email to admins and co-admins on the subscription. Additionally, you can also send these to custom email addresses. And then finally, you can also declare in this section webhooks. So in addition to that, you can also create an alert on activity log. And so here in my properties, what I do is I define the scope for which I'm interested in these different alerts, and then I define a condition. In this case, I want the category to be administrative. I want this to be for deployment rights and for anything of type resource deployments. Now, what's kind of interesting is imagine that you were an appliance operator, and this is one of the first resources declared in your template. And you also added another condition that's like, hey, when this thing failed, this would allow you to be notified anytime. ID of the action group, And then here is the declaration of that action group. And so in here, what you'll see is I provide various names for the group, and then I can declare those who will be notified via SMS, those that will be notified via email, or those that will be notified via webhook. And so, with that in mind, I'd like to hand things off to Ash, who's going to talk to you about Azure Deployment Manager. Come on up, Ash.
Can you guys hear me? Perfect. Ryan's favorite amazing TPS app. I have my favorite amazing contacts app for demo today. So my name is Ashutosh Shikirur, I am a senior program manager in Azure, and I'm very excited to be here, and more excited to actually introduce for the first time Azure Deployment Manager. And you heard of Ryan talk about managed applications, and it's about having the same application deployed multiple number of times. You sell them for multiple customers. You want to actually provide or sell your applications to different organizations to use. And with that, you actually want to manage these applications. So you want to deploy updates. You want to actually give them bug fixes, hot fixes, new features. So this is where ADM comes in. Some background. We talk about applications. They constantly need updates. You innovate. You provide feature updates for your customers. But deployment of these applications can actually get labor-intensive as your scale grows, as your reach grows across multiple regions, multiple subscriptions, multiple organizations. You don't want to actually spend too much time trying to deploy these applications one by one. And updates obviously are necessary, but they introduce a level of risk, which you inherently want to mitigate. You don't want your customers to experience any downtime during your updates. With that as background, I would like to introduce Azure Deployment Manager. It's a one-click solution to manage and orchestrate your rollouts safely. Built on three pillars, simplicity. So if you're using ARM, if you're already familiar with Key Vault, if you're already familiar with AAD, then you're actually going to love this because you can reuse many of your resources. We introduced a health integrated rollout mechanism, which basically means that you roll it out once, you govern your rollout based on some health signals that your service or your application emits. You don't have to handhold your applications. If you have multiple stages or environments, that you can actually roll them out in stages with health checks, of course. And lastly, we built this with a very open and pluggable model in mind. So if we support something called webhooks, if you want to bring in some of your deployment actions within the pipeline, we are integratable with CI/CD pipelines like Jenkins. And we have first-class support and integration with Visual Studio Test Services, or VSTS. And we are announcing a limited preview of this service now. We plan to actually start a public preview in fall. I'll hold this slide for a second. I do want to get into a demo. I started with some background and then what it is. We'll probably start diving deeper into some of the artifacts that we actually use for using ADM. I have the slide actually at the end, so. From a deployment perspective, obviously we want to know what you do. Like I said, I have my own amazing app over here, Contacts App. It's a very simple application. I'll show it to you in a moment. So if you have this instance of this application deployed in multiple number of times, so for a typical organization, you have multiple departments, you have an HR or legal engineering, you want to deploy an application, the Contacts app does nothing but shows all the contacts within the organization. That's the sample that I'm using here. Yeah, you can kind of correlate this to more complex solutions like SharePoint, for instance. You have SharePoint for HR, legal, engineering. As you build these managed applications like Ryan mentioned, and you start deploying them, you want to actually roll them out with feature updates. So normally, the way you would actually flow is you start with one region, check the health, make sure there is a bake time in there to get rich health information, then proceed next, do the same thing, and then get into the last one. Gives a nice little flow and make sure that your customers are never impacted. So if HR, if you experience some level of issue or some bad health signals during HR deployment, you kind of stop. And that's what ADM does, that ADM excels in. The idea here is you don't start with HR right away. You start with some test infrastructure, make sure you validate your code. But this adds a level of safety where you don't try to impact a whole lot of organization or all of your organizations or try to minimize the impact. Before I get into this, actually, let me get to my application. I did pray to the demo gods this morning while driving in, and it rained too in Seattle. There we go. All right, my sample application. So contacts app over there, I hope you guys can see this. Let me see if I can kind of zoom in a little bit. So there's an engineering instance, an HR instance, and a legal instance. I've already deployed the first version of this application. Sort of has a simple web page and an API defined over here. Just out of the box Visual Studio web page that I just picked and versioned it. Supports basically a web API, which is just dumps all the contacts that are stored in the memory. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start the rollout so that it takes about 5 to 6 minutes. And like I said, I did pray. Before I kick this off, a couple of things. We support commandlets, PowerShell commandlets, and we have integration with Visual Studio Test Services, or VSTS. The idea here is it'll be one of the entry points will be one of your CI/CD pipelines, which you normally already are plugged into. And if you want to do your rollout, that's where you will actually plug in ADM and start your rollouts. Commandlets, of course, is just a command prompt version of how you launch it. We provide a rich API set as well to pull information about your deployment. And the third thing about notification is we also do email notifications for you. All right. So while that is running, let's dig a little more deeper into what ADM artifacts look like. Excuse me, tech support. Which number is this for the PPT?
Five.
There we go. What does it do? So what do I need to do a rollout, right? I mean, I need your build, of course. I need your orchestration steps. How do you want to safely roll out? Second thing is I need to understand what your service looks like. And of course, your ARM templates to deploy your service and some configuration, configurable parameters so that you don't have to keep recreating these artifacts over and over again. And that's exactly what ADM takes in as input. Drive off of a single point, which is basically a folder under which all of these artifacts reside. Like you can see, my application, there's a build over there. There's a rollout spec, which basically defines what the orchestration steps are. And then there's a service model file, which kind of mimics how your service is laid out in Azure. Multiple resources, resource groups, and the parameters file is, and ARM templates you're pretty much familiar with. The rollout spec file points to your service model, which basically tells us how your service is laid out. And digging a little deeper, the rollout spec, starting with some metadata of your information, of your service, of your rollout spec, where does your service model file reside, what version you're trying to roll out, whether it's a hotfix or whether it's a minor or a major release. Some contact information so that we can send notifications to, and then follow it up with your orchestrated steps. Simple JSON file, you can either parallelly deploy all of your steps, or you can use the depends on tag here to say you want to serialize your deployment. In this example, what I'm doing is actually I'm rolling out the West US instance, and then I'm doing a check on it. So basically, the health check that is inserted in, it's a dummy health check that I've built so that it returns back after a minute saying it's all healthy. But you can actually incorporate much more complex health signals within this to evaluate whether you want to proceed forward or not. And the dot, dot, dot basically means you can have multiple number of these steps. What does a service model file look like, right? I mean, this is, at a high level, basically picks up all of your definitions for your ARM templates, and you can have multiple of these groups to indicate multiple ARM templates that you want to actually pass in. You lay yourself, your service out as service resource groups. You can kind of draw parallels between how Portal sees this as resource group and resources. That's exactly what we tried to mimic over here. You can have multiple resources within groups, and you can have multiple resource groups as well. And you can either deploy the resource groups as a whole, or you can then orchestrate within your resources individually. And the resource group kind of takes some of your key information, like subscription IDs, that you want to deploy to. And of course, that's your resource that you're trying to deploy. The parameters file, there is a rollout parameters file which ADM specifically takes in, which is if you want to configure ADM to use different values, for example, which you want to pass it down to ARM, then you can actually configure them over here based on region or instance, and it helps you kind of substitute these on the fly so that you create artifacts once, then you can reuse them to deploy multiple number of times. So at a high level, this is what ADM does. And from a demo perspective, let's see what it did. All right, what's going on? Still going. Looks like the HR instance succeeded. So let me go back to my HR thing. Refresh. There we go. So obviously, I can, within a couple of minutes, the other two will finish. Until then, I would like to see if you guys have any questions. And yeah, go ahead. Can you say that again? Yes. So the question was, on the notifications, there was one email. Can we make that an array? So you can do two CC. It's a semicolon or a comma-separated list, which you can actually add. I apologize. I had to call Ryan in because it's supposed to be a handshake. So a couple of things over here. I do have a VSRM integrated demo as well, which I'll post on channel 9 later. Much more seamless and more easier way to comprehend how you actually integrate with CI/CD pipelines. What else do I have? Call to action. This is where I was supposed to actually call Ryan on stage, but I decided to start that without him. So you're here to answer all questions.
Number one, we've shown you lots of examples about new and exciting things that you can do with templates. So go build some fancy templates. Everything I showed you today is in the process of following safe deployment practices, actually orchestrated by Ash's team using, I guess, an earlier version of what he showed you today. Item number two, we'd encourage you to create and share an application definition in your service catalog, and then deploy a managed app from it. If you would like to participate in the managed applications via Marketplace limited preview, please drop me a line. My email address is right there, ryjones@microsoft.com. I didn't pay enough, I guess, to get the Ryan J. or the R. Jones. And then finally,
Yes, so if you are interested in a limited preview of ADM, please email. There's also an intent form that you can fill at the AK.ms link. Please go ahead and fill. We would be excited to have you on board and work with you.
Excellent. Thanks so much, everyone. And final note, the source for all of the demos that I showed you today is available at the repo at the bottom there. So, you know, starting, you know, in the coming days, you'll be able to run everything I did today yourself. So knock yourself out, have fun, and enjoy the rest of Build, guys. Thanks so much. If you have questions, we'll be up here afterwards.